This content is AI-generated for informational purposes only and should not be directly used for clinical decision-making.
Hello and welcome back to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. I'm Dr. Aris, Senior Attending Neurosurgeon, and I'm joined today by our research fellow.
And I'm Dr. Alara. Today we're looking at a fascinating new study from the journal Child's Nervous System, specifically the 2026 issue. It's titled Endoscopic Posterior Vault Distraction Osteogenesis, PVDO, Advantages of Eliminating the Bicoronal Incision. It comes out of the team at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, including Philip Tolley, Adam Kundeshora, and Jordan Swanson.
This is a timely topic. For those of us in the pediatric world, we know that posterior vault distraction, or PVDO, has really revolutionized how we handle multi-suture craniosynostosis, especially those cases with bilateral coronal suture fusion. It's effective for increasing intracranial volume and correcting dysmorphology, but it traditionally comes with a high price, the bicoronal incision.
Exactly. The paper points out that while PVDO has been a staple since it was introduced by White and his colleagues in 2009, that large bicoronal scar remains a major concern for patients and their families. We've seen minimally invasive techniques work for single suture cases, like sagittal synostosis, reducing blood loss and hospital stays. But PVDO has always been the holdout because of the perceived difficulty of navigating the venous anatomy and the scale of the osteotomies required.
Right. The safety concerns regarding the dural sinuses when you're working blind or through small ports are significant. But this paper introduces something they're calling PV-Endo, endoscopic-assisted PVDO. Alara, walk us through the technical approach they describe. How are they avoiding that ear-to-ear incision?
It's a clever incision pattern. Instead of the bicoronal, they use four small incisions. They design 2 3-centimeter rounded chevron incisions at each end of where the traditional bicoronal incision would have been in the parietal scalp. Then there's a 2.5-centimeter chevron incision at the midline vertex, and a tiny 1-centimeter vertical incision in the low occipital hairline.
So 4 ports, essentially. And once they're in, how are they creating the space needed to work?
They use a 30-degree endoscope and extended-length blunt-tipped protected cautery to create subgaleal tunnels between those 4 incisions. They're essentially tunneling over the planned craniotomy sites. They define 2 planes, a vertical coronal plane at the region of greatest bicorrhoidal width, and a downward slanting axial plane in the low occipital region, meeting at about a 100-degree angle.
I noticed they also mentioned elevating the posterior margin of the temporalis muscles through those lateral incisions. That's critical for placing the distractor foot plates. But let's talk about the bone work. Making a full posterior vault osteotomy endoscopically sounds nerve-wracking.
It definitely requires precision. They used 4 burr holes, vertex, midline occiput, and bilateral parietal intersects. For the craniotomy themselves, they used a piezo saw under the guidance of both 0 and 30-degree endoscopes.
A piezo saw is a great choice there. It's much more bone selective and helps protect the underlying soft tissue.
Right. And to further protect the dura and the sinuses, they used a Jeekly saw-type malleable retractor in the epidural space. They described the craniotomies as submillimeter and worked from medial to lateral. Once segment mobility was confirmed, they placed the distractors.
Let's talk about the hardware. Where are the distractors living in this endoscopic setup?
They placed bilateral cranial distractors in the low parietal regions. The vector is slightly downward and parallel to prevent any mechanical interference. One detail I found interesting was the use of gelifoam. They placed 2x4-centimeter pads in the epidural space beneath the distractor sites for extra dural protection.
And they used reabsorbable fixators?
Yes, reabsorbable injectable polymer system, or IPS fixators, to secure the distractors. They also saved the particulate bone from the burr holes and used it to fill the gaps, stabilized with SurgiFlow. They even managed to inset the temporal muscle flaps over the distractors to restore pericranial continuity.
That's a sophisticated way to facilitate ossification while keeping the footprint minimal. Now, the paper includes a case report to demonstrate feasibility. Can you give us the vitals on that patient?
Of course. It was a 4-month-old female with torobrachycephaly, frontal bossing, and supraorbital retrusion. Her cephalic index was 0.99. CT imaging confirmed bicoronal and partial left squamosal craniosynostosis. Interestingly, she didn't have evidence of elevated ICP or papilledema at the time of presentation.
So she underwent the PV-Endo at 6 months of age. What were the perioperative outcomes? Because that's where the endoscopic approach usually shines.
The numbers are quite impressive. Total operative time was 128 minutes. But the standout figure is the estimated blood loss, only 50 milliliters. She didn't require any blood transfusion.
50 milliliters for a vault expansion is remarkably low.
In an open PVDO, you're often looking at significantly more, sometimes necessitating transfusions in these smaller infants. And how was the recovery?
She was discharged on postoperative day 2. Distraction began that same day at a rate of 1 millimeter per day, split into twice daily increments. The activation lasted for 37 days, and they achieved a 35 millimeter radiographic advancement.
35 millimeters is a substantial expansion. Looking at the before and after descriptions, the authors noted an improvement in the torobrachycephaly and a correction of the craniodysmorphology. This really challenges the idea that you need an open approach to get that kind of volume.
It does. The authors conclude that this PV endo technique is feasible, safe, and effective. They emphasize that it offers adequate expansion with a significantly reduced scar burden and advantageous perioperative characteristics.
Now, we have to be objective. This is an initial case report. While it's a brilliant proof of concept, what do the authors suggest for the future?
They are very clear that further study is needed. We need to look at a larger cohort to truly elucidate the indications, the long-term safety, especially regarding the distractors, and the aesthetic outcomes once these children grow.
It's also worth noting that the technique requires a high degree of comfort with endoscopic tools and specialized equipment like the piezo saw and the Jigley-type malleable retractors. It's not something a low-volume center would jump into without significant preparation.
True. But for residents and fellows listening, this represents a shift in thinking. We're moving from how do we get enough exposure to how do we achieve the same physiological result with the least amount of trauma to the scalp.
Exactly. The burden of a large bicoronal scar, as the authors put it, is a real factor in family satisfaction and the long-term psychological well-being of the patient. If we can provide 35 millimeters of expansion through 4 tiny incisions and a 2-day hospital stay, that's a win for everyone.
Definitely. It's taking the lessons we learned from endoscopic-assisted frontal orbital distraction, endophoto, and successfully applying them to the posterior vault.
Well, this has been a great deep dive into a very innovative paper. To summarize, PV Endo uses a 30-degree endoscope, subgaleal tunneling, and 4 small incisions to perform a posterior vault distraction that traditionally required a bicoronum approach. In this initial case, they saw minimal blood loss and significant advancement.
It's definitely a technique to watch as we head into the mid-2020s.
Thanks for joining us today on the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. We hope this was a valuable look at the future of craniosynostosis surgery.
We'll see you in the next episode.